This is the United States Dressage Federation's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Chris Stafford. Coming up on the show this week, we have an excerpt from the 2014 USDF-USEF Young Rider Graduates Program of an evening with the coaches. But first, Dolly Hannon from Avada, Colorado, presents our trainer's tip this week. Dolly is the current chair of the USDF Freestyle Committee, a USDF certified instructor through second level, and a USEF judge. Hello, Dolly. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Well, good to have you with us. You're going to provide us with a tip about freestyle, I think, about what will earn a good score, because everyone needs to know that, don't they?
Yes, they do. Freestyles have become very important worldwide, and the public interest is very high. So being able to present a high-scoring freestyle, especially for an international rider, has become extremely important. And the first thing being that the competitors really need to know the rules. The freestyle rules are not that extensive compared to the rest of the USEF rule book, but there are a couple of pages on the rules, and that would be a good place to start. The second place to start is the score sheet. There's a lot of information on the score sheet that includes tips for freestyle judges, and also clearly states what the required movements are for each level, and states what is clearly forbidden and clearly allowed, so that the competitor can start to have an understanding of what the judge would expect to see. I would look to see, number one, that the maximum time of my freestyle would be 5 minutes. Now, that is not required. You can certainly show a shorter time limit. And actually, for training or first level, that might be recommended, just because, especially at the training level, you don't want to be repeating movements over and over to the point where it starts to get too repetitious in the pattern. So we start with the maximum time. We figure, we try to assess what's appropriate for the level. And then we go through and we look and see what the required elements are, because not often are required elements left out, but sometimes they are. So you want to be sure that you understand the judge's expectation. At the first level I'm looking, you have to show 20 meters of continuous free walk, 20 meters of continuous medium walk, and then there are movements you have to show in both directions. 10-meter circles, and it states clearly, no smaller than 8 meters. Leg yield and trot, both left and right. A lengthening, not required both directions. A 15-meter circle or smaller, but no smaller than 10 meters circle if you canter. And again, you can see why it's important to know the rules, because if you didn't know that it couldn't be too small, you could get into trouble. A change of lead through the trot both directions, a lengthening stride in the canter only one direction. Both halts are now scored, and the rule has changed to include immobility in the halts, so competitors need to understand that. And then if we're looking at the score sheet, we have our collective marks on the bottom of the technical side. And then looking at the artistic side, that's a big discussion. That's where the judge is assessing our music and our choreography, our degree of difficulty, the interpretation of the music, and the harmony score, which in my opinion is the relationship score. It's a little different on the FEI score sheet, so if we have time, we can discuss that, but we're just right now looking at the USDF first level score sheet. So competitors need to understand that basically our freestyles are still a technical ride that is musically enhanced. If the technical is very weak, then the artistic impression is fit in that it's similar to a skater who's trying to accomplish jumps who can't quite get them done. It certainly affects the overall impression. So you have to feel as though or know that your technical competency is at a fairly high level in order to be able to really perform a good quality freestyle. So we talked about knowing the rules. We talked about knowing the required movements. In choosing music, we want to see music that suits your horse, meaning if you have a big, bold Frisian, are you choosing music from Pirates of the Caribbean, or have you chosen the Dance of the Sugar Plum Fairies? That's an obvious choice. But we want to be sure that the music suits the type of horse and that the music fits the gaits of the horse. For the lower levels, you're looking at three, at least, different pieces of music, one for the waltz, one for the trot, one for the canter. When you move up to the FEI level, it becomes much more sophisticated, especially when piaf and passage are included. And we do not have to see strict tempo, meaning that every beat of the music matches every footfall, but the music should suggest the gait. If you close your eyes, you could hear a walk, trot, or a canter. You want to be sure in your choice of music that you've chosen something that can be interpreted. Are there changes in the music? Are there crescendos? Are there places that sound like they would be a signal to make a circle or start a leg yield? The rider wants to be able to show that they are hitting the musical changes. And if a piece of music does not have a lot of variation within it, you can also add some variety by increasing the volume if needed, for example, for a lengthening or an extension. You want to make sure that your choreography is balanced and uses the whole space. Mirror images are not required. You do not have to do something from letter to letter. The judges are not looking to see that in both directions you started something at one letter and ended at another. However, you want to be sure you show enough of the movement. So, for example, when I mentioned earlier that in the first level freestyle you must show a 20-meter minimum amount of continuous free walk, you need to be sure the judge understands that and can see it, because otherwise we really never want to confuse the judges. You want the judge to be relaxed and comfortable at the end of your freestyle, not wondering what they were looking for or if enough of the movement was performed. Mirror images of movements are not required. However, you certainly can do that. We want to feel as though the judge can easily see what you're doing and that it's performed correctly. And it's generally recommended, this is not in the rule book at this time, that, for example, with a shoulder in or leg yield, you show a minimum of 12 meters. So at the FEI, this is clarified, but if we look at our USDF tests, it is not in there yet. It might be there in the next test cycle, because we've recommended that. The choreography must be clear and easy to follow. And you want to be sure, as a competitor, that you really know your choreography so that you're not wondering where you are or, hopefully not, leaving out movements, which does happen occasionally. You want to know your music quite well. You can either, nowadays with all the soft that's available, mix your own music if you're computer savvy, or you can hire a freestyle designer. There are some excellent ones out there that can be found easily online. And they will either choose the music for you or mix the music for you and possibly even provide the choreography. There are all different levels of services they can provide, or you can do it yourself with some help. You want to feel as though when you have your choreography in place and you all have thought about what your horse does well and what you don't perhaps want to highlight. For example, if your horse has a wonderful extends her open trot, that can definitely be a highlight and be repeated, even though earlier we mentioned in the first level freestyle that it wasn't required. Just be careful not to do so many repetitions of a favored or a favorite movement that the judge runs out of room on the score sheet to score it, because we are required to score every movement that we can recognize. So oftentimes in a first level freestyle, we will see many repetitions of 10-meter circles or leg yields, which is really not a good idea. You want to feel as though, in my opinion, you get the required movements out of the way, and then if you've got something your horse does well and you want to repeat it as a highlight, that's great. But watch repeating movements over and over. You want to be sure that you hit both of your halts in the beginning and the end of your test, preferably saluting on the last beat of the music, not required, but at least if you halt on the last beat of the music, it adds to the impact of the freestyle. It doesn't look good to stand there and wait for your music to end. And if it's for a very short period of time, it's probably not a big deal, but oftentimes we'll see someone get nervous, halt quite early, and stand there and wait a long time for the music, looking a little embarrassed. You want to try to look happy during your freestyle. At the end of your freestyle, smile at the judge, look proud at your accomplishment, because it helps. You are utilizing showmanship. And as I mentioned a moment earlier, you want to be sure and highlight your horse's strengths, but not repeat what might be more challenging for your horse. I also previously mentioned that you want to be sure that your technical execution for the level is high. So, for example, we're discussing first level. If first level test 3 is quite challenging, you might want to wait a little bit before you start working on your freestyle, because the horses that really do well at the different levels are probably scoring at a level above where you're showing their freestyle. It makes it look so much easier. And that's what we're really trying to do. We're trying to show a musical, basically an interpretation of our horse that is positive and looks easy, harmonious. There's nothing more beautiful than a horse moving to music and the horse and rider working as a team. I mentioned not repeating movements too often. Oh, one tip in terms of thinking about showmanship, you can cut your corners to catch up with the music, or go deaper into the corners, or half halt in the short ends to wait for your music. This all takes practice, and that's why at home you are really going to spend quite a bit of time practicing your freestyle. Now, there are two different theories about whether or not the horse should hear the music or not. Probably at the very top level, many of the riders do not let their horses hear the music, so they don't anticipate. You will see them practicing with their iPods on. However, for me, at the lower levels, I think it's very important for the rider to hear the music and become so familiar with it that they can really interpret it well, know where the changes are, know where they're riding their movements, and know how to adjust if something might have changed. In the old days, we used to play the music. We used to play tapes, but of course, you know, now that's not acceptable. And a rider must be able to provide 2 DVDs to the show in case one fails, and this does happen at shows. Sometimes there'll be a failure of the music. So you want to be sure you've got a backup DVD, and there is a new rule that sound checks must be provided to riders. So if there's a problem with their DVD player and your DVD, you would know that ahead of time. You must present your compact disc to the announcer at least 2 hours prior to the start of the class. So I've had 2 instances this year where someone had a music failure and were horrified that they didn't have a backup. That's very important. If there is a musical failure, the rider can, with the permission of the judge at CD, leave the arena and restart the test either right away or when show management deems it's appropriate. The rider will decide whether to restart the test from the beginning or to commence from the point where the music failed. Judging restarts at the point of interruption. So, for example, let's say halfway through your ride, the music failed. The scores that had already been given will stand. So that's important to know. They're not changed. And you can also start from the beginning because some people can't pick it up halfway through. But that's, in terms of the scheduling, it's up to show management. For me, in looking at it, the main thing is to really show your relationship with your horse to the judge through music. I mean, to me, riding a musical freestyle is just so much fun. And it should look like fun. And sometimes, obviously, we may have some tension issues. In your choice of music, be sure to choose something that doesn't wind your horse up. That if you have a hot horse, calms your horse. If you have a lazier horse, perhaps makes the horse look a little livelier. So the music choice is quite important, and that is where a professional can guide you because they can give you some different ideas. They generally ask a competitor to provide them with a video of a test so they've got an efficient way to look at the gates, look at the type of horse, and see what would be appropriate. If you're very musical, you can do this yourself. It does take quite a bit of time. But it can be a real fun project. And the sophistication of the software is such that changing the tempo of the music can be done much more easily than it used to be. So you can generally speed up or slow down music by about 15%. So you can get it closer to fitting your horse. And at the end of the test, I would highly recommend that you pet your horse because it looks as if you're finishing the test. You're happy with your horse's performance. And I've certainly had performances myself where my horse had other ideas, but I still try to reward the horse and look happy so that the judge is left with a positive impression. In getting back to knowing the rules, there is a time limit. I think I mentioned this, 5 minutes. The FEI, they give you a longer period of time to complete your freestyle. So, for example, the Grand Prix must be done within 5 minutes 30 and 6 minutes. The other FEI tests must finish between 4 minutes 30 and 5 minutes. And they are timed. That's an important thing to know. Also, one other important rule is that the rider will signal, the judge will blow the whistle or ring the bell. The rider gets in position, signals the sound person to start the music, and once the music starts, the rider has 20 seconds to enter the ring, and this is timed, so it's important to know that. So knowing the rules is quite important. And the score sheet gives you a lot of information. So that's something you really want to familiarize yourself with before you start the process of doing your own freestyle. When we look at the artistic impression side of the test, you can look to see what the coefficients are and what is deemed to be most important. And you'll notice that the choreography has coefficient of 4. In terms of increasing your creativity for a freestyle, you can show movements off the rail. You can show movements in a non-test-like pattern. And one thing that's important to know is that a non-test-like pattern means that it's not exactly from the test. There are not too many ways to combine some of these movements without having them look a little bit test-like. For example, if you're going to show shoulder in and a half pass, you can think of different places to put it, but there aren't any different ways to show it that might not have ever been in a test. So if it's not exactly the way it is in the test, don't worry about it. Try to show your horse's strengths and try to make any movement, I know I said this before, but I think this is very important. You want to make any movement very clear to the judge. So, for example, a shoulder in towards the judge is easier to assess the angle than away from the judge. A half pass towards the judge generally looks better. Now, if you're doing a freestyle that's going to be judged by multiple judges, then you can certainly mix that up. But if I'm choosing to show a half pass towards the judge or a leg heel towards the judge, I would choose that first. And then perhaps if I needed to do one way, that could be an extra repetition of the movement. So we're looking for challenging the horse. If you look at degree of difficulty, that basically is including calculated risks. Did you do something that was difficult that your horse could perform well? If yes, that's a plus. If no, then that lowers your degree of difficulty score. So the music score, the music is not as impacted by the technical execution as everything else on the artistic side. That's your homework ahead of time. Is the music suitable? Did it fit your horse? Interpretation is a little bit affected by performance, because if you can't hit marks, if you miss the phrasing, if you miss the dynamic qualities of the music with a medium lengthening or extension, it affects that score. So in the FEI freestyles, they tell us over and over again that the technical execution, the artistic impression are strongly related. In our USDF freestyles, it's not quite as emphasized because of the differences in the score sheets. We really need to look at the USDF score sheet and an FEI score sheet to understand that our scoring and the way they're laid out is a bit different. So if you have a strong technical performance, the music fits, you've ridden a balanced pattern that shows your horse's highlights and all the required movements clearly to the judge, you've taken calculated risks to raise the degree of difficulty, you have a good working relationship with your horse, and it looks quite cooperative, then you should achieve high scores in your freestyle. And it definitely is possible. I've given some very high scores on lower-level freestyles and upper-level freestyles, because if it's harmonious and it works, there's nothing more beautiful than bringing horses to music. So I think that pretty much covers it. There's a lot to talk about, obviously. We could talk at length about the judging of the artistic side, but I know that USDF has a revamped program on judging of the freestyle for the continuing education program, and that, if it were offered in someone's area, would give the competitor quite a bit more information on how freestyles are judged. It's actually quite complicated, and we're working very hard to offer more freestyle education to our judges and L graduates so that they understand and can really give a clear evaluation and be able to give the competitor some feedback. Sometimes what happens is the freestyles are scheduled so tight in the timing that the judge really doesn't have time to write very much. So if you get a freestyle test back and there's not much in terms of a final, further comment, oftentimes it's just because the judge doesn't have time to do it. These freestyles do take a lot of practice to become efficient and quick in the judging process. But if there is time, and the judge will absolutely try to give you some feedback, what was their impression? You know, what do they feel could really enhance your performance? So be sure and read the score sheets. And if you're not clear, you can always request through the technical delegate to talk to the judge. Be sure and bring your score sheet with you. But the judges are always happy to talk to competitors with the technical delegate there about a question. And that's happened to me. I've had people ask me after a freestyle what I would change or what they needed to improve. So that's another venue for getting more feedback.
Thank you very much indeed, Dolly.
You're very welcome. It's my pleasure.
And now for an excerpt that was taken from the 2014 USDF-USEF Young Rider Graduates Program entitled An Evening with the Coaches. It features USEF Technical Advisor and Chef d'Equipe Robert Dover, the USEF Young Dressage Horse Coach Scott Hassler, Olympian Stefan Peters, and begins with the USEF Developing Coach Debbie McDonald answering a question about her career and if she knew then what she knows now.
As we train horses, I think you always wish you'd known what you know now. I don't think that there's still a day that goes by that can't be in effect. So I think it's a journey, and you have to think of this as a journey. We all make mistakes, and we all try to do the right thing for the horses. So I can't pick right now one particular situation for me. It was always just trying to get education, living in Idaho, trying to put myself out there, coming from the hunter-jumper world, learning how to ride dressage was a huge challenge. So I have a lot of history of things that I think I wish I would have been able to have started my dressage career much earlier than hitting 50 at my first Olympic Games. But I don't regret a day of anything that I've ever done in my life with horses.
Can I ask, how old are you?
27.
So it's sort of an interesting question, because at your age, that was my first Olympics.
Oh.
So and we are now. I'll
no
tell you,
pressure.
Now, but here's this is sort of interesting, because I'll tell you something that we were talking about at our table earlier, and that was what some people that knew me way back then know, that wasn't just my first Olympics, that was the first international show of my life. So now think about that. My first CDI was the Olympic Games. That's not a good idea. You know, it's not a good idea in any real way. If I said, what would I have done differently, I would have not allowed myself, had I been, and yet, you know, did I want to do it? Of course. And the other thing that's sort of weird is I actually thought I was going to win. Because, see, I had no sense of reality. I had no idea what was possible. I never met Reiner Klimke. I mean, he was a big, you know, name. And I never met all those other people. And I knew their names, but you got to see, we didn't have media like we do now. It wasn't like I could see them on videos, you know, every single day in real time. So there was really nothing that I could compare to other than my other colleagues who were on the team with me. And, you know, I went into that Olympics on a horse that, I mean, certainly I have to look back and say I loved my horse, but would I choose that all over again? It was a horse with one amazing gait out of the three possible gates. And so many things that I look back on that were just comical that, you know, part of it was not knowing that I couldn't win. Then getting there 3 weeks before and having the coach line us all up. And this is out in Los Angeles, which was amazing to have your first Olympics be in our own country, right? So 3 weeks away, we're all, you know, at Santa Anita Racetrack, and everybody's training, and all the teams would be training. They trained in arenas that went around the racetrack, and they had already built up the huge stadium and everything. So we're training with our coach, and our coach lines us up. This is the first day, 3 weeks out, and so we're all standing there, and there are the four of us, and he says, just so you know, I know more about your horses today than you will ever know. At which point, we all became smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller until we were this big. And he said, so I'm going to take your horses now and start working them daily, and you can cool them off. You can walk them around in the beginning, and then I'll ride and I'll train, and then you can cool them off afterwards. Okay, then fast forward 3 weeks. Then the day of the competition, I'll never forget, I'm first to go for America, seventh in, and you have to go from warm-up arena to warm-up arena to warm-up arena to the, like, outside the main arena. You had a 10-minute area, and then you go in. So I get all the way, you know, I had started like, you know, rah, rah and everything. That day, I'm like a deer in the headlights, right? Not having a clue of what's going on. I get there, and so I get to the last minute arena, and I said, Coach, did you know that we haven't done any Piaf passage at all? So back then you could do all sorts of things, you know, that you can't do now. So he says, come over here. So Piaf. So the horse would pee off, and he would do a slightly lower step, and he'd go with a whip, whack! And the horse would, like, raise his legs up to his belly. And so this was a horse that he could pee off, passage, extended trot. Anything in trot was great. Then, you know, he would whack, and he'd go really high, and then he would go a little lower step, he'd go whack! And then a little high, and then he'd go. So then I said, so then all of a sudden it's my time, and I haven't done a transition at all. He says, don't worry, do some passage around the outside of the arena. So I go in, and it's 28,000 people, right? And I'm like the first American, and everybody's like wildly cheering, and I'm thinking, oh my God, this is surreal. And, you know, I go in, and I get to the first Piaf, and I go into the Piaf, and it's like pretty expressive, and then I think, okay, now forward, and nothing happens, he just goes higher. And then, you know, I put my leg on again, and he just goes higher. And then finally, I like go, and I kick him, and we go flying forward, and I've now done 27 steps of Piaf. And I did that 3 times. Consequently, I was 17, which, you know,
that's
looking,
not bad.
But you have to understand that the bar back then was, if you could complete the test without a fall of horse and rider and doing the movements, basically, the bar was so low that a 66% became the individual bronze medal. The individual bronze medal was a 66% with Le Mandis, with Otto Hofer from Switzerland.
That's crazy.
And 69.8 won the individual gold with Alaric, you know, with Reiner Klimke. And so anyway, I was 17, you know. But that was, so that's my story. So to say to you, are there things that you would do differently? Yes. Don't put some kid that's never been in an international competition into the Olympics for their first competition. Next.
Sky?
I don't know about differently, but I would have changed it knowing what I got out of it. And that is that for my career, I would have wished I would have been in Europe earlier than I was there. I got so much out of living in Europe. And it completely opened up my world. When I was fortunate as a really young kid, I got to work for a breeding association. So I rode tons of young horses and stallions and mares and rode auctions, all those things, and I knew one breed. And so that's why breeding was kind of always exciting for me, because that's where the opportunity was. But on my own farm, you know, we just had average horses, and through that breeding society, I was able to ride better horses than we had at home, which taught me a ton. And then I did the young rider stuff, and then when I was 21, I got an invitation to go to Herb Raybon, and stayed there for 2.5 years. I was going to go for 2 months, and then I thought, when I got there, it was like, I don't know a thing. I've just tasted what's here. This is crazy if I go home. So I stayed 2.5 years, and it's the best thing I ever did. And if I look back at it now, I wish I would have done that when I was 16, 17, 18, because there's so much to gain from that. If you're going to choose this as a career, I think there's nothing more important than knowing the sport. And we have a lot of wonderful things here, but there's also a lot of very wonderful things in Europe. And I think as a professional, it's good to have that in your background. If I could have done that sooner, I would have done it, because it totally led me where I was going.
Scott talking about like the network in Europe kind of brought this to mind a little bit, because it is sort of very individual sport. In order to really excel in the sport, you have to be a team player, and you have to, you know, be able to network and everything like that. And regardless of you being on a team, really just in terms of building a network and trying to collaborate with other trainers, how do you practice teamwork?
I think of a team in my world. My team is my vet, my shoer, my groom, my everybody that's part of what I do is a team. And I think when you build up a lot of confidence and respect, and you work alongside with them instead of talking down to them or expecting them to pick up a pitchfork, and you join in, that's building team spirit. And I think it goes all the way on up to the Olympic Games. I mean, you never should feel above picking up a broom or a rake or I still clean toilets, so, and I'm okay with that. I'm proud to say that. I'm actually, nothing has changed in my life since I was 14 years old. And I think because of that, that's why I have people that have been with me for a long, long period of time. So respect and working along with them helps build team spirit in your business.
I completely agree with everything Deb said. I went to Europe for our riders all from the early part of the summer on, and when I would get there, if the horses had not arrived, I made sure that the stalls were ready for them, so that if Tina Cunyat arrived in Auchleiten and she's tired and she had trailered all the way from, you know, near the border of Holland and Germany, that the horse could walk in, and then it was a lot easier for her. So, you know, taking that kind of stress off, because it becomes really about being on a team is about being there to support everyone's dream, you know, and not being so self-absorbed that you can't see that everybody's waking up every day trying to do the best they can with what they know. And I have to say, like, you know, Deb has had an amazing team of people behind her, and I love them all. You know, from her assistant to her groom for many, many years. When I see him now, I saw him at Betsy's, I love seeing him because he's fabulous and incredibly knowledgeable, probably more knowledgeable than a lot of the trainers that are out there. So, you know, he knows what he's looking at and gets excited by it. So it's about all of those things.
I was just wondering what your advice was as far as your balance with your family or your personal life, where I have a 3-year-old, and so it's been a tough thing for me trying to balance what I want in my career with having, you know, a family, and I'm just wondering what your advice was on that front.
Well, I actually had a son when I was doing what I was doing with Brentina and going to Europe. And I had, again, my team, which is also my husband, was incredibly supportive. And he would choose to stay home to give me the opportunity to go. Do I feel a little guilty as I get older that I missed some of those times with my son? Absolutely. But I have an incredibly wonderful son who also was very competitive at what he loved, which was ice hockey. So he got it. He knew exactly why I was doing what I was doing to be the best I could be. And I think the thing you just have to remember is family really is first, but you can balance it. But you have to have the right people in place to make it happen for you. But it can be accomplished. It really can.
I couldn't agree more. You bring up a really good point, and it's really hard, but it can be done. We have 2 daughters, Suzanne and I, and I mean, I'm lucky enough I get to share the sport with my spouse also every day, and so that helps in a way, you know, with the 2 girls, and one is very horsey and one isn't. So we try very, very hard that it's, you know, 50-50 for the kids, and especially for our daughter who's not interested in horses, because there's a threesome and a one. You know, so we try really, really hard, and like Deb said, get people around you, get support, and share the interests. It's not easy. I'm really glad that you brought the question up, because that just shows the value of how you're thinking, and that's wonderful. But for sure, it's family first. Suzanne and I made that conscious choice when our kids were going to be in grade school age. We stopped coming to Florida. It's not a right or a wrong question. It's what's right for you. And to Suzanne and I, it's that we don't want our kids being traveling kids. We wanted them to have home and have their friends, and we were fortunate enough that we could keep our business at home. We didn't have to come down here, and if we had to come here for something special, we would have for a few weeks, but we chose not to be winter people for our daughters until they were out of school. Now they're out of school, and here we are again, so it's great. But again, you'll find your own choices that you make. It is possible, and I think Debbie brings up an excellent point. Surround yourself with great people who can help out.
And I see that's very emotional for you, and I commend you for that, and just know that it's possible. It can happen. I was 50 at my first Olympic Games, so your life is not over. You've got plenty of years ahead of you.
Yeah, and that also goes with people, you know, that are young and still going to university, or even older and want to go to university. And last week when we were having the kids, or I don't know, 2 weeks ago now, it's been
long
a whirlwind.
Gone.
But at any rate, I said, you know, do not pass if you can go to university, and I'm not saying that's for everybody, but in general, and they said to me, you know, university or this. And I said, I went to university and I'm so thankful that I did. And getting that, you know, degree, because the horse world at its very best, with all the advantages and with all the gifts, if someone has them, it's still really hard. It's a hard life. And for most people, it's a hand-to-mouth existence, and it's not an easy existence. So if you have something else that you know you can do, that you're, that you have a degree, it's a great thing. And so I would always encourage young people or older people these days to, you know, make sure that you're well-rounded. And again, we love what we do and we love our horses, and we do the very best we can in life and in sport. Those who are going to be great will become great. Like if you're going to be great, you're going to figure it out and you'll be great. That's the way it is. And if you're not going to be great, you're not going to be great, and nobody's going to make you great.
Can y'all each share one of your favorite memories?
I'm going to have to say the World Cup in Las Vegas when I did Respect. I think that was that was made for many reasons, and I really felt that the mare had not gotten the respect always through her career, and I knew that it was maybe not going to be a judge's favorite, putting vocals and things that were fun, and I was hoping that the word would get out that I wanted people to enjoy it and really rock on. And it was like a movie I had produced, and everything came true that I wanted it to come true. And that was like, that was something that doesn't happen very often in a career. So that would be my most memorable.
I think mine was making my first Grand Prix horse, from backing it to Grand Prix all the way through. The horse I was given at that time from the Holsteiner breed was a breeding stallion. He was very unhealthy when I got him. He hadn't been ridden yet. He was 5 years old. So people say behind schedule. Yeah, he was behind schedule. Five, I'd never ridden. And he was a pretty manly boy, too. He was a fantastic jumper. At that time, I was more eventing than I was dressage. And I did everything with that horse. I evented him through intermediate level. Somebody challenged me to take him fox hunting. I took him fox hunting. He was driven in a four in hand. I took him all the way to Grand Prix dressage. Was he a superstar? No. Did I win a national breed title with him at Grand Prix? Yes, that was meaningful to me. But still, the memories of making that horse, my first horse, from first time on his back to in the Grand Prix ring with scores, for me, just still was a thrill.
And I've had a zillion fabulous memories. Mostly, I mean, I really have. Most, the whole road has been, for me, the road has been just fantastic, and meeting all the people, but if I had to like pick one thing, I would say when Deb and I and the others were in Athens, having a team of incredible professionals, the whole thing, I mean our riders, the whole staff, everybody, and then we competed and we got our medal. And the truth is, if the Grand Prix, if it was the way it what is now, where you do the Grand Prix and the special and they combine the scores of the Grand Prix and the special and then you make your medal off of that, we actually would have won the gold medal in Athens from that. That's how well that team went. But the best part of that was my parents were both still alive then, and I knew that it would be the last time that my parents would be able to watch me. And I had a personal best, and they were there, you know, in bad health, but they were there. So that was, for me, huge, that we had this amazing camaraderie, amazing success, and my family was there.
You can find more information about the Young Rider Graduate Program, which is scheduled to take place again in 2016, by visiting the USDF website at usdf.org. And while you're on the website, be sure to visit eTrack, the USDF's online learning center and resource for dressage and equine education. This podcast is also available for download on iTunes. The USDF is your connection to the American dressage community.